welcome to episode 3 of the Round Ball. Daniel Severino, Andy Burnell, welcome, lads.
Hello, mate. How you doing?
How you going, boys?
Yeah, good, boys. Now, Sever, it's good to have you back, mate. I know you've been busy at work, and being busy in lockdown is a good thing, mate. So we missed you last week, so good to have you back.
Thanks, guys. I missed the show. I missed you guys, and happy to be back.
Now, Sever, we've had some really good feedback from last week's show, and people are actually starting to watch. So, Birch, I know you personally have had some feedback for some people you know that are starting to watch the show.
I've had a lot of feedback, and it's really welcome news. It's always great, you know, to receive, you know, positive accolades, you know, when you're building something like we are. And you know, it's just a different form of entertainment and broad, you know, that we want to bring to Australian broadcasting. And we're going to get better and better. And like I said, it's unfiltered. It's pretty raw. It's honest. It's our honest opinions. And but I really believe that it's what Australian football has needed for a long time. And you know, the real positive feedback that we're receiving is something that you know, we don't take lightly, but that we prepare and work hard for. So, you know, there'll be more of this.
And there's every Wednesday night, 7 o'clock, we are live on YouTube. So you can guarantee every Wednesday, 7 o'clock, you'll be able to get the all the news from around the world and in Australia. Now, boys, this week we're going to look at players from Western United and MacArthur FC. So we're going to start with MacArthur. And Birch, you go first for me. Who have you got?
Well, I'll call Adam Federici on the MacArthur side, the goalkeeper, ex-Reading FC, as I was, and just brings a wealth of experience. You know, he's known the ups and downs of being a real professional footballer in the UK, in Europe, and he brings that to a MacArthur side that Milicic is building. And I really believe that all football sides, you know, that are successful are built around 2-3 key players. And, you know, the goalkeeping position is certainly one. And Adam brings that to that dressing room. And he'll be an empowering force for the younger guys in that team. And at this level, you know, a real solid signing for MacArthur.
And he brings a wealth of experience to a team that's obviously new to the A-League and building their own, I guess, identity. And he's been around big clubs, obviously played international football for Australia as well. So he understands the ins and outs and what makes footballers tick, as well as what makes clubs tick.
Oh, look, he's a quality goalkeeper as well. You know,
Yeah, of course.
Beyond the experience, he's a good footballer, a good goalkeeper, and it's really what you need. You know, if you don't concede goals, you don't lose matches. You know, that's
absolutely.
So I just think he's a good signing for MacArthur, and someone that can keep the ship or the boat steady at the back.
Yeah, and an experienced head in goal. So that's all you want. Now, Steva, you've taken, I guess, a player that has been a little bit, has been around for a little while now, but probably hasn't reached the heights that we think he probably should, or I think he probably should be one of the best players in the league. So you've got Danny De Silva.
Yeah. He's an experienced campaigner now. I believe it's his time to shine.
Yeah.
He's that player that I think most clubs try and spend $700,000, $800,000, $900,000 to $1 million a year to acquire a player like that. I think that he's come of age now. He's got plenty of games under him. He knows the refs. He knows the leagues. He knows how to travel and stuff. And I just think that he's at that ripe age where he's ready to fire. And you never know. He could sneak into the Aussie squad. You know.
And Perch, I know we had the conversation. To me, he's that game changer as well. You know, where every sort of football team needs someone who can score a goal from anything at any point as well.
Look, I agree. And, you know, he's the type of player that every side needs, you know, and we for a long time here in Australia, you know, have kind of shied away from these talented kids, you know, that you know, can be game changers, that can take people on one-on-one. And, you know, he's he's someone that brings that X factor to a team. As long as, you know, within the realms of a defensive unit and pattern that Ante wants to put into place, you know, because they're all bound by defensive duties as well.
Yeah, of course.
But certainly someone like De Silva, you know, it'd be, you know, go for it. For it, young man. Win your one-on-one battles. And if you lose it, I've got a 6 and an 8 that are going to win the ball and give it back to you. Okay, and you're going to go at someone again, and you're going to go at someone again, and you're going to go at someone again. And if you lose it 3-4 times, your 6 and your 8 are going to win it back and give it to you again.
And I just think it's a confidence thing, Sever. And I know you and I have had conversations over the last few weeks as well about that confidence stuff. If he's confident, I reckon he just rips the league apart.
Oh yeah, 100%, 100%. Look, there's no reason why he can't. It's all about. I reckon it's all about the atmosphere. For example, when a coach says to you, especially in that position as a number 10 sort of position, look, I know you're going to lose the ball. I know you're not going to work hard. Because, look, let's be honest. You can't make 60 tackles a game, score 2 goals. You just can't do it. That's why it's a team. It's a team effort. You can't have your defenders scoring 25 goals a season, and you can't have your number 10 making 600 tackles a season. So it's all about the element underneath an umbrella. I think if a coach goes to him and says, listen, I know what you're capable of. Like, for example, I'm pretty sure Diamante, he's got a free roll. Yeah. Do what you want. You know, I think someone needs to get into De Silva's ear and say, look, I hold you on the same level as Diamante. Go do what your heart tells you to do, what your brain wants to tell your body to do.
And just that's be a footballer.
Just be a footballer. That's what Burst just said. Go do it. There's a 6 and an 8 that's going to clean up your shit. And, mate, go for it, you know. There's going to be games where he's just going to be unplayable.
As long as he's clever enough, when they lose the ball, to get himself quickly into defensive unit positions that enhance the whole side defensively. Yeah. He doesn't have to make every single tackle. You know, he doesn't have to be that dog that makes the tackles. Diamante certainly is not that. He offers so much going forward, but he's clever enough to put himself in positions where immediately when Western United lose the ball, he's in a position where it creates not such an easy path for the opposition to then attack you. That's the cleverness of Diamante.
And I think Milicic will help with that. I think Milicic will help his game with that as well. Yeah, Seva?
I think, well, for example, I played the number 10 role most of my life. When I, like me personally, I couldn't tackle a salad. And I knew that. You know what I mean? Yeah. But when I lost the ball, I knew straight away, if I plugged a certain hole and I sat in an area where the opposition started circulating the ball, but they wouldn't come to my side, for example.
That's the perfect scenario.
I'd plug a hole so they wouldn't come down my side.
Yeah.
You've got to be smart enough. Exactly what Bert said. Whether it be sitting on, you know, their number 6 or their 8 or whatever like that, you'd be useful. You'd be a body. And then, but when you're in that area, you start doing what Frank Arrock used to say to us as kids. Your neck, after 90 minutes, your neck should be sore because you should be taking photos all day, all 90 minutes. So what I'm basically saying to you is when he tracks back in that position and plugs a hole, his next thing is right. Okay, I'm set here. No worries. When we get the ball, I've got 10, 15 yards around me now. I'm the outlet. Yeah.
Mate,
and then he goes again.
And Seva, that's a perfect opinion, right? You've played the role. And that's what our viewers want to hear. You know, they want to hear why Danny De Silva what he needs to perform, and you've just given us a perfect explanation on why. Now I'm going to add to that, right? So if Danny De Silva can be the man there, I think Tommy Juric can score. I think he can be Golden Boot this year, and also get himself a Socceroos jersey. Now, Bert, you and I last week were I guess critical of the tactic at times that the Socceroos used, and I think they could use Tommy Juric moving forward in Asia. For the qualifying campaign, if he's fit enough and firing,
100%. Look, I'm always a big fan of a good, fast, strong, solid number 9. You know, the Viduka type, the Drogba type, the Diego Costa type, the Torres type. You know, I'm a fan of that with a little striker next to him. You know, a good number 10. You know, the very creative 10. There's just a handful for centre halves, and Tommy at this level is a handful for centre halves in Asia. He's a handful for centre halves. So, you know, he's come back and gone and come back, and you know, it's now up to Tommy to be that 21, 22, 25 goal a season striker that wins things for MacArthur and that causes grief and headaches for centre halves in the A-League and that is given international recognition or more of it. And you know, if he doesn't do that, then, you know, it's on him. It's time for him to be that man.
Yeah, and I'm with you. And, Severo, I know we were just talking about like Danny De Silva and you played as a number 10 as well. And I think if you can have a good number 9, big, strong number 9, I think it probably makes your job easier at times as well. Yeah, you know he's going to be there all the time.
Yeah, especially in hold-up play. For example, your team's under the pump. You can just literally bypass the midfield, drop it into him on his chest, and then you're that third man running off him. You just, as he just drops it on the ground, you sweep in front of him, you start picking up the ball, and then you're already facing the right direction and you're already a positive threat to the opposition. And yeah. That's what I think what Birch was saying. I reckon Viduka, 50-60% of his game was all about trying to bring people into it. And I think that's where Juric is going to... Like, again, another thing too, I think he's at the perfect age too.
Yeah, he's 30 now.
Yeah, you could probably agree, Birch, especially with sports science and stuff like that. Like, I think 27, 28 to 32, or maybe not 32. In some cases, that's your prime. And I think he's smack bang in the middle of his prime for his body.
Look, he seems a good athlete. He just needs to get cleverer and have a greater understanding of what's required of him in a match. You know, hold the ball up. Do not lose it. Bring people into play. Spin off. Get on the end of it. It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
You know, do that. Do it well, and goals will come.
Make do the basics.
Into dangerous areas. You know, it's when people go away from what their job is. What is required of you? Hold the ball up. Do not lose it. Bring people into play. Get into the box, into dangerous areas, and put your head and body on the line.
Yeah,
and goals will come. It's not difficult.
And I think Milicic will work well for him as well. I've got a big opinion of Ante, and I think he'll help. Well, those two boys in the outfield that we spoke about, and if you put Federici, his experience in, I think MacArthur will do pretty well this year. Now, moving on to Western United, they've had a gaffer change, and John Aloisi's there now. Now, Severo, I'm going to leave you to last here because you've got who I think one of the best players in the league. So we'll leave you to last. But Birch, you're going with a keeper again?
I'm going with a keeper, and it's a young boy that he's an older man now. He's been around for a few years, but he's still a very, very fine goalkeeper, Jamie Young.
Yep.
And I took him to Reading as a 17-year-old kid when, again, one of these boys that was ignored by the system in Australia. And by 18, he played for England under 18s and for England under 20.
Okay.
And, he didn't quite play that many games at Reading, and they loaned him out to other sides in England and to Wycombe Wanderers and I'm not sure of the other ones. But he played 100, 150 games or something in the UK before returning home to Australia. And for me, over the past 5, 6, 7 years, he's been the standout goalkeeper in the A-League. And you know what? I'll go as far as saying this. Up there is one of the best goalkeepers I've ever seen, you know, technically and in general play and shot stopping, but 5'10". You know, it's the reason that if he was 6'1", 6'2", he would have played for England and the Socceroos. He would have been able to choose either or if he was 6'1", 6'2", 6'3".
Yeah, okay.
And it's funny because, you know, based on his height, you know, the Reading technical director, when he saw him play at 17, he said, wow. You know, and his kicking game was like Matty Ryan and Casillas. Fantastic. But they took a chance on him because they thought he might grow to 6'1", 6'2".
But he didn't.
And that's the funny thing about, you know, if you've got someone like Iker Casillas, the legend for Real Madrid and Spain, Captain Spain, over 100 caps. If he was brought up in, or if he had been born in the UK, he wouldn't have got through their academy systems. Too small. Yeah,
too small.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, despite his height and despite where he could have been with more height, Jamie has been a fantastic stalwart and rock for Brisbane Roar, a key asset for them. And he'll be missed by them, but what an asset for John Aloisi.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. So he'll be a good sign. He's a good signing for Aloisi. He's obviously, he'll be good in the change room, an experienced head. and someone that Aloisi can count on to be, as you said, saving goals and keeping them in. I dare say he'll keep them in a lot of matches.
100%. And he's a good talker. You know, he got to England at an age where he was 17, 18, 19. So he's grown up on that, you know, that ethos or you know, the message from coaching staff that you've got to talk in any position. So yeah. He's a talker. He will marshal his troops well. And if ever there was a clever signing this season, it's that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, also and I don't disagree with you there.
I think a fact about Jamie Young, doesn't he have a PhD as well?
He does. He's a clever bunny.
Okay. He is, isn't he?
Yeah, he does all his extra study and, you know, he'll end up writing books on probably going to the moon or something like that. But he, he's...
typical goalkeepers, eh?
Different type of human, but he's a beautiful guy. He's a good man and he's doing the right things and he wants to help, you know, the indigenous, you know, kids in this country. And so he's got his fingers in a lot of pies, but in good pies, in the right pies.
Yeah.
And he's someone that, you know, I'd love to have him on the show one day and I'm sure he'd come on.
Yeah, brilliant. And it'd be a good conversation with him too, especially he'd probably too smart for us if he's got a PhD, but we'll have to go and study the dictionary and whatever else. Now, Seva, I'm gonna cut straight to you because I'm big time on this guy. I think he's the standout player in the A-League, and I think he's the star power that the A-League. I think he's probably the only star power in there at the moment. And you played against him in Italy.
Yep.
And it's Diamante.
It's Diamante. I first played against him, I think, back in 2000 when I was at Piacenza in the youth team.
Yeah.
And I think he was at Empoli at the time. And I think my first running with him was, I think I flew back for Christmas, went back over there in December. It was pissing down rain. The pitch was the worst. I remember I came on. It was one, I think it was 1-0 at the time or 1-1. I took a penalty and I actually missed. And I remember him, mate, he had the same haircut, that little fuzzy haircut. He came up and said something funny about me. And then I sort of like chased him a little bit. Like, because it was during the keeper's picked up the ball. He's thrown the ball. Anyway, he's gone the other end. I've chased him pretty much 18 yard to 18 yard because I just had the shits. And he's fucking scored a header. Excuse my French, hey. He scored a header on me. He started laughing. Yeah, he started laughing and celebrating around me. And then 20 years later, he's playing in Australia.
Yeah, and I think he adds that quality that John Aloisi needs in his squad. You know, he's a big, powerful figure, and he'll keep everyone in check, yeah?
Well, I'm not going to – okay, I think you've got a coach in Aloisi who has played in Europe, understands Italian football characteristics to a T. There's no one in the country that knows, I think, the Italian league as well as him, all right? Now, his previous coach, Rudin, in my opinion, I think he's all about himself. Always has been, always. That's me.
Yep.
So – I just think that it was after a while, and I knew prior to a couple of months before Rudin was given the boot that he lost the dressing room. Yeah. And I'd known that because I heard it from players. And the truth's the truth. The fact is a fact. I think that Diamante now, you're going to see the Diamante that, you know, we all hope to have seen. I think he was restricted when Rudin was a manager. But I think Aloisi is the perfect... I think they've deliberately hired him to get the best out of Diamante.
And Bert, you're of the same opinion about that, yeah?
Well, I knew from other players in that squad, you know, 8 weeks prior to Rudin departing, he'd lost the dressing room and he'd lost the key man of that dressing room, Diamante. And like Seva said, you know, in John Aloisi, and he's still growing as a manager and coach as well. But he's the most qualified in this country to understand Diamante's journey, to understand that culture, the Italian culture, how it works in Italy. And John will know exactly, you know, the psychological type of information, you know, required in that dressing room and towards Diamante that will get the best out of him. You know, and from Diamante's point of view, he will look at John and he will say, you know, he'll have a lot of respect for John in what he's done on a football level himself as a player. So, you know, that commands a lot of respect. You know, Mark Rudin going into Western United's dressing room is not an unforeseen thing, but, you know, to then, you know, to control and to work with and to get the best out of Diamante is looking at Mark and going, well, you know, to be honest, what's he done?
Yeah.
To be playing mind games with me.
Yeah. It's the mind games that affect people differently.
Once you try play mind games with superstars, you want to have a good CV yourself. You know, yeah. you want to have some international caps on the play. You want to have some international caps and you want to have 300-500 games in Europe before you start playing games with Diamante.
Or he's exactly
gonna,
right.
He's just going to rebel, you know, rebel, and he is going to grab the rest of the side and say, no, we're not having this. And so it's a fine line between being the manager and also, you know, having that kind of friends, mateship kind of thing with the players.
Yeah.
Seva will tell you, you know, it's like Andrew's doing it to a certain extent, but Andrew was a player as well, and he works in a different way. But, you know, not easy for someone that hasn't played at levels of the superstar that you're trying to make the leader of your side and to help you win a championship. And then if you start messing him around, there's just no respect back because, you know, Diamante would say, well, what have you done?
And Seva, he said that to me last year.
What have you done in football?
Yeah. And Seva said Seva said he saw a different Diamante here last year. And he said, it doesn't look like he's enjoying his football, I think you said to me.
No, he wasn't. You can tell. Look, I sort of play the same style of him, pretty much play off your memory, no-look passes, whatever. It wasn't happening. It definitely wasn't happening. And then the fact that Berisha wasn't scoring and their good mates off the pitch. We follow a lot of people on social media as well. And you could just get the hint that there was something happening. And then when it was confirmed by other players that Rudin had lost the dressing room, now he's more than welcome to come on and talk about it and set the record straight.
Absolutely.
Because that's what it's all about. I'd love for him to come on, but that's just the information that we've got. And, maybe it was more about him than Diamante. And not to say that Alois is going to be a pushover. Definitely not. But the Italian mentality is completely different to maybe Rudin's mentality, who was a central defender, who was a good central defender in his time. He did win a couple of championships and that, but don't try and go toe-to-toe with someone like Diamante, who's on the same level as Del Piero. You just can't do that.
And I think for John Aloisi, it's a it's a new opportunity to further his coaching career and credentials, and he would have, you know, learned good and bad from his past experiences in the game, as we all do. And I believe for him now, it's not about John knowing the game or not knowing the game. Well, you know, that's a given. He knows the game.
He does.
It's now about him, you know, creating an environment and an atmosphere where he has 11 men, you know, and 11 soldiers that are ready to come in. He has an environment and a dressing room there that buy into what he wants, and that he sells it well, because he's got some good cattle there.
He's got good cattle.
You know, and if he doesn't, you know, finish in that top two or three with the cattle that he has, you know, then I'd be surprised. You know, and I think more for he doesn't need advice from me. But he, if I was to give any advice, make sure those troops are you've got them mentally buying into you.
Yeah.
And I think
Weston. Yeah, go, Seva.
No, sorry, just to add on it, like take the football aspect out of it in general. When you've got a friend, like, you know, like we all have friends, we all have mates and that, you do more for a mate when he respects you and you respect him. When if your mate's an asshole, you're not going to run through a brick wall for him, are you? Let's be honest. But Aloisi is a very, very like bloke and character.
And I think he's, if he can get, as Birch said, If he gets them all on board, I reckon they're in for a big season. And if he can get Diamante enjoying his football again.
Totally agree.
And I think they're in for a big season. Now, boys, I know we've just spoken about the A-League, but I want to take you over to Europe, and it's going to be about PSG and Man United. And, Birch, I'm going to start with you. Do you think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer needs a trophy to justify him getting another year, or will they sack him? And do you think the players like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
I think he needs a trophy to not be sacked. But Mourinho won a trophy and he was sacked. That's where we are in modern day football. Ollie is an easier, smoother ride for the players, the leaders in that dressing room. He was around the club when some of them were in the academy coming through. So he's kind of been, you know, they've been players together. He's been a senior player when some of them have been younger players. So they have that relationship.
Yeah.
Certainly he has the cattle to win, you know, the league and go far in the Champions, you know, and if he doesn't, questions need to be asked. But that's modern day football. You know, he was a wonderful, wonderful player, international. You know, there's not even any negative that I can give you on that. Management's a different kettle of fish. He has the cattle. Again, like we were talking previously about John Aloisi and the players at Western United. You know, Man United, Ollie has a fantastic, you know, you can't ask for, you know, that's top quality cattle. Now, can he bring them together? Can he empower them? Can he have them playing for themselves and for him and creating a winning Manchester United?
Yeah.
And if he can't do that in the dressing room, you know, then he may go. But it's one of those situations where these days you have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of those players on £500,000 a week, and you know that's how Mourinho felt. You know, he gave them some tough love, some hard love, and they didn't like it. Some of them, so they got together.
I think you're right there, Birch.
They got together and player power got rid of Jose Mourinho because, you know, wherever he goes, he's a fantastic manager and he wins trophies. He is a winner. Make no mistake of that. And for me, Man United's loss. But again, player power these days, you know, when you're paying money that you're paying, it's easier to get rid of Jose than to get rid of, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 players on £500,000 each on 5-year deals.
Yeah. And Seva, do you reckon he's got that? Always got that in him to be able to, I guess, pull Ronaldo over the hot coals if he can, pull Pogba over the hot coals. Do you reckon if he gets that in him that, you know, I think you see a change in Man U?
Yeah, I think so. I think the players, for example, excuse my expression, but the big players coming in like Pogba and that, like, you know, rocking up the training every day in his £1 million car, with knowing that Mourinho's there thinking, fuck me, am I going to be pulled in today because I had a bad game on the weekend, another day, this feels like Groundhog Day. Yeah. I think by relieving Mourinho from his position took a lot of pressure off those big stars. So I think someone like Ollie is going to be like your friend on your shoulder who will be able to pull it. Look, you can't coach these players. These players are there. They're worth all that money because, you know, technically, tactically, they're all there. It's all about keeping the harmony when you've got so many so-called Galacticos, like big stars in one team. And I think just almost like outpricing yourself. Mourinho, in another form, I think he outpriced himself with his attitude and he's just probably just too full on with the big, big players. And it wasn't an easy ride, like Bert said, under Mourinho. I don't think any player has ever had an easy ride unless you're winning. And at the time, Manchester United weren't winning. But I think Ole has the goods to be able to pull it all together. And I think the acquisition of Ronaldo is gonna be perfect. He's already scored 3 goals in what, 2 games? Like,
he's
3 goals.
Yeah, and I think Ole's probably the man. I just think, and Bert, you and I have had this conversation, I think the fans and the media just jump on board and just want him out straight away before before even looking at what he's done. You know, they just say, okay, he drew with Club Bruges or he's lost to whoever. All of a sudden, he can't coach. You know, football's football in the end, yeah?
But it's the modern day curse of football, of social media, of journalism these days, you know, of experts online. You know, everyone's an expert online. Everyone has an opinion online. Football at the end of the day is 11v11. You know, everybody, the problem these big sides have, and it's, I kind of make the comparison with tennis, and it really makes you kind of think how special Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, that for 20 years they keep winning slams and do it consistently well. You know, even the, you know, the Challenger tournament, whatever tournaments they play in, they don't have to be the Grand Slams, but they're always there about. And this is when everybody else on the planet is bringing their A game. So Man United, PSG, you play Real Madrid, everyone's bringing their A game against you. Yeah. Can you be, you know, can you win every single game? It doesn't happen sometimes. It doesn't mean you're a bad manager. It doesn't mean you're a bad side. You know, I think we're too easy to be critical and have an opinion early doors after a draw in Belgium or something like that.
Let's
be the judge at the end of the season when all points are put on the table, and we see what you've won and you haven't won and how you've played. We were discussing the other day, you know, was it your Liverpool team?
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, coming, if Liverpool comes second for the next 2-3 years, is that a failure?
Well, and especially when they did come second and got 99 odd points, and Man City got over 100 points, nearly went to the EPL for the last forever, you know?
How is that a bad season? You know, that compared to 99% of the rest of the planet, that's like fantastic football. And a fantastic season and a points haulage that anyone would want. Yeah. And it's not good enough. Where are we going? Where are we going with football?
Back in the day, 80 points would win you the Premier League. Now you need over 100.
Yeah. And now teams are going through only dropping draws.
You know, you've got to spend at the bottom.
Yeah, well, you need to get another 8 to 10 wins.
If you come up from the championship, you need to spend 100 million. Yeah. You know, and it doesn't guarantee you that you're going to stay up.
Yeah.
It's madness, but it is what it is. And you know what? I would say, you know, as a finality on the coaches, you know, within the system now, they signed 3-4-5 year deals like Jose.
Yeah.
So you want to sack me?
Yeah.
Give me £20 million pay up, you know, and severance pay, and I'm Gonski. Yep. And then I'll go to Roma and I'll go here and I'll go there. And if you want to sack me after every year because I've, you know, because I'm coming second or third for a part of the season, then give me £20 million and I'm off. And over four or five times of doing that, Jose's sitting there on the Portuguese, you know, coast down in the south and then, you know, with 100 million quid in his pocket. You know, thank you.
And all he's done is coach to his best ability, and he goes on and wins something else somewhere else.
Yeah. All he's done is be fired by 6-7 guys up in a board who have, most of them have no idea about football.
So we'll move on. We'll move on to PSG. And look, you made a great point there about let's judge them at the end of the year. But there is talk around, I guess, PSG obviously being the Galacticos of today. Do they need to win the Champions League to justify the spend, Sever? Is that your opinion? Or do they need a year or so to gel together?
I don't know, because there's plenty of teams that are spending that money anyway, like Man City, United, wage bill. Forget about the transfers. I know the transfers are huge and that, but you've got to talk about the actual weekly wages. Look, there's 4 or 5 teams that if they don't win the Champions League this year, they're going to sack their coaches. But I think with the players that they have, they've got to be at least like Birch said. If Liverpool comes the next 5-6 years in a row second, is it considered as bad? I think that if PSG at least don't get in the semi-finals for the next couple of years of the Champions League, I think that's pretty poor.
Yeah.
Whether you win it, it's all about who wakes up on the left or the right hand side of the bed on the day.
Of course.
I'm not sure if that answers your question, but as long as they're there or thereabouts,
it basically relates back. Yeah, it basically relates back to what Birch said, and let's judge them at the end of the year. It's just a lot of chat around Europe and on social media again that they didn't win their first Champions League game, Birch, and all of a sudden Pochettino can't coach, Mbappe, Neymar and Messi aren't getting along, all that sort of stuff, because they haven't won a game, yeah? The talk starts.
Look, Pochettino can coach, you know, make no mistake of that. Whether he can gel that side, you know, in the dressing room, only he will know that, and only the players will know that. The rest of us that are outside and don't know much or have an insight into that dressing room, it's hard to opine and to give a real expert opinion on it. But, yeah, from the distance where we are, if he doesn't win, you know, the Champions League with that side, with that front three that he's been given, you know, I think he'd expect to be sacked.
Yeah.
Whether that's that for me, if he made the final and they lost, it's still, for me, that's still a success. You know, for their board, you know, for the Qatari hierarchy, you know, they might say, you've got to go. You know, he probably would have to go. If it was at Real Madrid, he'd go. They're very ruthless with managers. But like Sever was saying, there's 3, 4, 5 sides. You know, there's not just one side in it here. And as far as Galacticos go, I was lucky to be around that team, the Real Madrid team, that were called Galacticos. Mm. And, you know, Messi, Neymar, and Mbappe, you know, I can't argue with their pedigree. You know, it's just super, super, superstars. But there was something about the Real Madrid Galacticos that, I don't know, you just look at them, you know, outside of training, or you'd go to Ronaldo's house or something, and it's almost like they were rock stars as well. You know, the Roberto Carlos, the R9, the, you know, Beckham, Zidane, Figo. You know, there was just an aura about these people that I'd look at them, you know, and I'd played at a decent level. I'd look at them and I'd go, wow, these guys are like, you know, even Maldini and Christian Vieri, who came to, you know, a couple of parties a few times at Ronaldo's house, and they'd look at the Galacticos and go, wow, you know, kind of like these guys are like Hollywood superstars. And I don't, you know, I'm not quite sure Galacticos the right word for those PSG players.
Yeah, just yet, I agree,
but they are super players.
Look, there's one Galactico for sure. That's Messi. But
yes,
let's be honest, Neymar's moved clubs. He hasn't really, you know what I'm saying? Like, I know, look, there's, yeah, I think the Galacticos of Real Madrid, they were a special breed. And I think these guys are, Messi,
you include in that. Yep, yes, Sever. I agree with you, mate. You include him.
Yeah, but I think Mbappe, maybe not. I don't think Mbappe is. He's just unproven. He's just a quick, fast guy who puts goals away in the French league, unproven in England.
Totally agree.
You know, but, you know, Neymar as well. Neymar, yeah, but I just don't think Neymar is Messi's level.
Yeah, so, but it's a good talking point, right? It's a good talking point because they spent the money. They got the wage bill. So it's a good talking point, I feel, around Pochettino and whatever else.
Money for them is not an issue. I think they'll just go out and they could go out and spend another billion if they wanted to. The money is not an issue.
Yeah, it's no issue
for them. For them, it's they want the Champions League trophy. That's why Messi has gone there. That's why Mbappe has stayed there. That's why Neymar is still there. That's why Ramos went there. You know, there is no other purpose for that side being assembled. That side is assembled to win this coming season, this season's Champions League. The French League is a given. If they don't win that, they should all be sent to Siberia, okay? They need that's a given. Now, the Champions League, they need to win it, or at the very, very worst, make the final.
And it'll be a good talking point, I guess, towards the end of the year as well on how they've travelled. Does injuries, is their squad deep enough to make through the Champions League at the end and all that sort of stuff, you know?
If it's not deep enough, are you telling me PSG's squad, like with Pochettino at the helm and the side they have, the 11, and everybody on the coaching and technical staff, I'm trying to figure out how they could use a not deep enough squad as an excuse?
Yeah, I'm just, absolutely.
I haven't, I haven't, I haven't
you know
seen,
what?
I haven't seen, you know, the bench and the other 11, 12, 13 players that they have in that first team squad. But, you know, with all the money and resources they have, if you don't have, you know, if you don't have a good backup 11, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, if you don't have depth, then your technical department, PSG, and I'm not saying this is the case, but if that was the case, your technical department needs firing.
100%. Yeah, 100%. Now, great. Boys, before we've got a couple of things just to finish off before we go. Sever, I want to get your opinion. We spoke just before Ronaldo left Juve, obviously to Manchester United, and you've played in Italy. Birch, you've played in the La Liga, so you understand that. But, Sever, I want to get your opinion on Ronaldo leaving Juve and now Juve struggling. Did Juventus underestimate what Ronaldo bought to that club, or are they just in a quick changeover and they'll be back up the top at any point?
No, I think that when the opposition sees Ronaldo's name on the team list and they know he's playing, straight away it's a completely different approach to the game, because you know that he can pop up from anywhere. Dead balls, either score him himself or he can get on the end of headers. He can score from inside the box, outside the box, left foot, right foot. He's just a constant threat, all right? Now, I think Juventus, there was something there where, like I said to you a while ago, before it even happened, there's something about it. The Italians don't care. They'll they won 8 or 9 of them in a row without him, and they don't mind moving him on. But in saying that, you need a replacement.
Yes.
For 3 seasons, for nearly 100 games or something like that, they were sport by having him. I personally believe they did underestimate the power of Ronaldo, the aura of him. And I just think that he elevated, for example, like Messi did at Barca. When you saw Messi's name on the team list, you knew they were going to play a certain way. With Ronaldo, again. So I believe that they underestimated the Ronaldo effect, and they probably thought that there was life after Ronaldo. But I think that I think it might take a little bit of time before you see the Juventus of old come back.
And we'll no doubt be talking about that over the next few episodes too, to see sort of how they show the build. Now, Birch, I'm asking you, obviously, you know the La Liga pretty well, and it's the same question to you. And you and I have spoken about this off air. And did Barcelona underestimate what Messi brought to them?
I'm not sure they underestimated it. I'm pretty sure they weren't able to keep him, you know, through the financial situation. But certainly, you know, someone like Leo Messi is a once in a lifetime player. He's a Maradona, a Ronaldo, and what these players bring, even more so than their ability, is it's very empowering for the rest of the team. Very, very empowering. You know, every player grows wings, and I suppose the greatest example I can give you of that was the day Beckham signed for Real Madrid. We went to dinner that night, and I was sat with Jorge Valdano, who won the World Cup, you know, playing up front with Burruchaga and Maradona in behind. And, you know, I had the great pleasure of sitting next to Jorge all night and asking him, you know, he told me all the Diego stories, just brilliant. And my point is that Valdano said, you know, when we won that World Cup in 86 with Maradona leading the way, we just knew. He said, I knew we were going to win the World Cup. You know, the little man would walk around the dressing room and we all knew. He would tell us. He would say, we're going to be the champions. And he said it was so empowering. You know, the rest of us were fantastic, world-class players, but we had Diego, you know, putting the armband on, and you'd see him do his little flicks and tricks and warm up, you know, in the dressing room. And you know, that general that he was, it's very empowering. And Messi in his own way is like that and has been like that at Barcelona. And, you know, the fraud's not the right word, but, you know, the whole fallacy of football academies and development and stuff, it's like, you know, La Masia, you know, the greatest production line, you know, football factory. It's like if Messi went there at 12 from Argentina, if he goes to Sevilla or Valencia or Naples or Juve, they have the success that, you know, he had at Barcelona, but he has it with another side. It's just they're one in a million players. It's what, you know, the great Diego did at Naples. He went and took a team that was, you know, almost bottom of Serie A, you know, and they became UEFA champions, you know, the champions of Italy. And, you know, with him and he brought in a couple of players. And that's what those special players do. And you know, Sev is right with Ronaldo as well. You know, the boys are in the tunnel and they've got CR7 with them. It's very empowering. You know that I would be very empowered to be running out behind, you know, Ronaldo or Messi, and I'm thinking, man,
yeah,
it's whoever beats us today, if they do, well, they want to be a pretty special side.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's a good talking point, lads. I think it's a good talking point because you see, obviously, Juve now down the bottom of the Serie A and Barcelona getting beaten 3-0 by Bayern Munich. I guess we're not going to see these generational type players again, like Messi and Ronaldo. They're being compared. Yes, is one better than the other, but it just shows in their presence what they've done at either club and what it does when they leave. I guess that shows their ability and what they do marketing wise as well for that certain club.
It's a big, the impact follows, you know, in the seasons to come, because initially, you know, you can talk over a summer and, oh, we're losing Ronaldo to Man United at Juve, for example. But it's almost like soldiers coming back for aura, this post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, that filters, you know, that grows within this club. And it's kind of like, you know, then they have a couple of losses and it's kind of like, uh-oh, you know, he's not here anymore.
Yeah.
You know, he's not here anymore. What do we do? You know, the great man's gone. You know, and then, yeah, you know, they're all watching English TV and he scores two on his debut. You know, and they're going, oh, my God. And it's just, and it's not even about ability anymore. It's a mental state that even a big club like Juve or Barcelona can get into, where all of them are starting to kind of doubt, we can't win anything without CR7. We can't win anything without Leo.
Yeah, and Seba, being obviously playing in Italy, do you think Juve go hard in the next transfer window for that type of player again?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a good question. I reckon 100%. And also, too, they need to deliver another big star to the fans, you know?
Yeah.
Keep the fans coming through the gates. Or else the fans will rebel. They will. They'll stop going to the stadiums if they stop investing.
Yeah. Now, boys, I want to finish off with my new favourite team, Brentford. Now, they've come up. We were talking about before, Birch, how much you got to spend coming up from the Championship. Brentford, just dead set. I just love how they play and I just love what they're about. Now, you've also got a friend, Birch, that you know, Brent Ford, who is a Brentford fan. Is that right?
He sure is. He works on local Canberra radio and he did some training with me and he used to work for, you know, under my wife. He's a great lad. He's done his journalism degree, just commenced on radio, and his name's Brent Ford. And yes, he does love Brentford. They've been his team for a long time. We'll get him on the show one day.
Yeah, Brent Ford supporting Brentford. Yeah,
a great, great lad and, you know, a football follower, a sports fan. But Brentford, what an amazing story. You know, I know Sever's played at their old ground and I've played at their old ground as well. You know, just a magnificent arena, you know, in the middle of Brentford. This is the old pitch. You know, 20,000 a couple of times there in the evening on Tuesday nights. A great atmosphere. But a club that you would think, you know, would not be, you know, where they are now. You know, a lot of progress in relatively, you know, a few years, but good on them, you know, because it's a beautiful part of town. It's kind of just a little bit further out than the West End of London, you know, where QPR and Chelsea and all those kind of teams. So it's kind of in that Hammersmith area towards Ealing. And look, I love the area. Janie and I stay there when we're in London, and good on them. We have a lot of friends that are Brentford supporters. I love that club, that family type atmosphere.
Yeah.
And I mean, Sever's probably got a few experiences of playing there, but I only wish for them the best and to continue prospering.
Yeah, I'm with you. So Sever, give us, you've played, you told us before you played at Brentford.
Yeah. I just asked before, I go like about stuff like that. It was just literally right there. From the road was literally right there. You got the back of the stadium, little footpath, and then the road, pretty much. Yeah, like it's just great for a club like that to not saying come from nowhere, because there's a lot of money had to be spent to be able to get there, and over the years, and they've got there, and it's a fantastic little part of it's come under London, would it?
Oh yeah,
Birch, it's come under London. Yeah, London, is it?
It's maybe not far, 5, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, you know, further on from Hammersmith. It's kind of between Hammersmith
further on,
and,
yeah,
and Ealing. So it's QPR, Chelsea, a bit further
Ealing,
out.
Yeah.
Hammersmith, Ealing, a great spot.
Yeah.
Great spot of London, you know, just a little bit out,
yeah, it's
of
a great spot.
London. And for me, you know, I've had a lot of friends that have played. I've had friends, good friends that have played for Brentford and Lloyd Owusu. Lloyd played for them. You know, he's a big star for them. Yeah. So there's a few people out here in Australia that have a relationship with Brentford. We should get them on at some stage.
Yeah. And look, we're gonna keep following.
Maybe get Lloydie on.
Yeah.
I'm all over Brentford, so we're gonna keep following. Now, boys, that wraps up episode 3. So again, we hope everyone loves what we're doing and looks at the analysis in a good way. And shows that we're going to give our opinions. We can't wait for football to start. And also, we can't wait to get back into studio. So we also apologize for some technical difficulties on what you're seeing today. But we're going to be back in studio soon. So, boys, once we're back in studio, it's going to be Mickey Mouse for us, right?
It's going to be, mate, it's going to be correct. Disney World. That's what it's going to be.
Mate, Gladys has got to open us back up and Birch Canberra's got to open back up so we can see each other again. Now, today's show is brought to you by Mates. Choose a provider you can trust like a mate. Visit letsbemates.com.au. Now, boys, these shows can't happen without the support of all our sponsors, so we can't thank Mate enough. And we also can't thank DS Tipping and Excavation, so Seva, I know you've been busy. We appreciate your support and your continuation of being the best lay. I reckon we're in Western Sydney now. You're out of Penrith, so best lay in Western Sydney.
Yep.
Also, MG Active, you can catch the boys online. They're doing Zoom classes every day, keeping us in shape. Look, I look Mickey Mouse at the moment after all the burgers I'm eating. Sensor Studios, the man behind the camera, Jeff. So get in contact with Sensor Studios. If you need any live streaming or any videography done, he's a genius, isn't he, boys?
Jeff, good man. MG, shout out to the Panther, the king of the Panthers.
And they won overnight. So, Severy's keeping you in shape too. You look good, pal.
Also, too, guys. Yeah, I look good. But also, too, guys, get out there and buy Andy Burnell's autobiography, Writing Shotgun. It's still going great with the sales, and it's an awesome read, eh? I absolutely love it. I haven't finished it yet, Birch. I'm very, very busy, but I pick it up every night and get 3 or 4, 5, 5, 6 pages out of the way. And I love it, eh? Absolutely amazing.
I'll eventually have an Italian edition for you, mate, and for the Italian community. Yeah, right? We'll work on the Spanish one first, and then
there we go.
Seva can promote my Italian one.
So get out there and buy his book. And we can't thank Ignify Legal enough either. So get in contact with Ian and the team from Ignify Legal that we've tagged on socials and whatever else. And Monster Clothing, who have come on board this time around as well. So we tagged them in socials. They shared our stuff the other day. So any gear you want, jump on Monster Clothing on their socials and order some good gear. Seva?
Yeah, mate. Yep, get on there. Don't be shy.
Yeah. Now, boys, again, we apologize for some technical difficulties today, but we're going to be back in studio pretty soon. So, boys, thank you for today, and we'll see you guys next week.
Pleasure as always, mate. Cristiano Ronaldo, yeah!